and even local sources. I look at news sources as human beings doing what they do. All of us have our prejudices, and many of us are very professional at what we do. And you have to expect people to act in the way that their culture is going to inform them. So, for example, I don't turn to British for the best news on liberation movements in Ireland. But the British publication Guardian.com has something that you should look up, that publication. You should read it maybe daily, at least a couple times a week, because they have a thing they call The Counted, and that is they are keeping track, and they were the first and they are the best at keeping track of police killings in the United States, something that has gone on in part because we don't talk about it. And when I say police killings, I'm talking about, of course, police killings in the category of racial animus and disproportion. As I've said many times, that word that conservatives cannot hear, disproportion. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to have Dan Handelman talking about that. First, I want to talk about UN war crimes. Investigators have denounced a staggering loss of civilian life caused by the U.S.-backed campaign to reclaim Raqqa, the de facto capital of the Islamic State. Speaking for myself, we also have a war in Syria. Let's not forget that. This war is also evil, wrong, and based on false statements. It is a war for oil profits. It doesn't work out to actual profits in terms of how much the U.S. expends in dollars and lives and ruined lives and moral credibility. No, not at all. But that doesn't matter because it's being driven by people who will profit. And when it comes to that, your money is no object. The Independent Commission of Inquiry, tasked with investigating violations of international law, war crimes, and crimes against humanity in Syria, said the intensification of airstrikes by the U.S.-led coalition had led to the deaths of at least 300 civilians in the city. This is in the last few days. The Raqqa operation began last week with a ground assault by the Syrian Democratic Forces, an umbrella group comprising Kurdish and Arab militiamen armed by the U.S. and supported by coalition airstrikes. They have already pushed into Raqqa from the east and west, reportedly approaching the old city walls. Citizens have reported intense combat in areas of the city. Civilian deaths from U.S.-led strikes on ISIS surge under the Trump administration. And there's a quote. We note in particular that the intensification of airstrikes, which have paved the ground for SDF advance in Raqqa, has resulted not only in staggering loss of civilian life, but has also led to 160,000 civilians fleeing their homes and becoming internally displaced. That's a quote of Paolo Pinheiro. And again, that's from The Guardian. And now I'm glad to be joined by someone who has actually put his life on the line in the Middle East, someone who walks his talk, someone who, unlike me, is a pacifist. This is Dan Handelman, who keeps the daily vigil at Portland Cop Watch. And Dan, thanks so much for joining us here at KBOO once again.
Sure thing, Teresa. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I wanted to talk about the situation, which became once again slightly more obvious over the last week or so, when we had white supremacists come out and do their intimidation thing on federal property, and then we had the rather shocking sight of right-wing militia directly aiding very comfortably the federal police, and then we had the Portland police engaging in an abusive and obviously aggressive maneuver against the counter-protesters for no reason that I can see, aside from just aggression and a desire to show them what was what and who was really in charge. So, of course, I want your comments on that situation. I found an article. Are you still there, Dan?
Yeah.
Okay, I heard a little click and just want to make sure.
Yeah, there's something on the phone line, I guess.
I'm not letting you have a word in edgewise, so it's hard to tell if you're there. But in 1991, a neo-Nazi white supremacist gang was terrorizing the streets of Linwood in Los Angeles County. The reasons these violent thugs could run amok was because they were deputies at the Linwood Sheriff's Station, having the power of blue privilege. This is from an article on December 19th, 2015 in the Free Thought Project, which was published in Alternet. A federal judge acknowledged that the gang of deputies carried out systematic acts of shooting, killing, brutality, terrorism, house trashing, and other acts of lawlessness and wanton abuse of power, end quote. And of course, that was against black people. And so I'm trying to set a little background, and I want to pick your brains as well. And I want to talk about what we are facing here, what you remember about the various outbursts and what they might indicate about the status of white supremacy in the Portland Police Department.
Sure, I guess. The most famous instance that we know of is this person who's now risen all the way through the ranks of the police, become a captain named Mark Krueger. And for the listeners who aren't familiar with him, as a teenager, he was ride around in a car with his friends and shout Nazi slogans and say Heil Hitler and spray paint stuff. And then after he joined the Portland Police Bureau in 1999, he nailed up tributes to Nazi soldiers in a Portland public park. Nobody knew about this until 4 years later in 2003, when he was one of the officers accused of brutalizing protesters who came out against the war in Iraq. And a friend of his called a defense attorney who was, a plaintiff's attorney, who was suing the police for the violence, and said that, revealed his whole history about Krueger and mentioned these plaques. He didn't mention plaques. I'm sorry, I want to correct myself. No, he mentioned this history. So the lawyer asked for discovery material from the city, and including anything about Krueger's Nazi past. And the city attorney's office turned down his request because they said it wasn't relevant to the investigation. And fast forward, it was like, I think either 2009 or 2010, when it came out, the city attorney actually had, Krueger had come into their office with the plaques that he'd nailed up in the park and said, you might want to know about this. And they hid these plaques from the public, from the defense, from the plaintiff's attorneys for all these years.
And this is going much further than someone who gets a frisson from shiny boots and monocles.
He was dressing up in Nazi regalia. There's photos of him. And he said he was just doing it as a history buff. Now, I should say also that during this time, he rose the ranks. He was a sergeant during the protests in 2003. He became a lieutenant and then a captain. And there's word on the street, such as it is, that when he does work with the communities, the immigrant communities, that he's actually been very helpful. As part of his punishment, once they found out about his sympathies, he had to go to cultural
sensitivity
awareness
training
classes. Yeah, who knows what his actual beliefs are now? But the fact that this is somebody who was active in the police bureau when this was going on, and that he's risen so far through the ranks, and now he's the head of the Drugs and Vice Division, and I can't remember the exact thing quote that he said, but there was some salacious nightclub that he just found to be inappropriate behavior, and I just thought it was ironic for a guy with this kind of activity to be making judgments. But the thing that really is horrible about this situation is that he was punished for nailing up the plaques, and this is some more than 10 years after the fact. It was after all this came out, and then he, as a captain, he was in charge of somebody in his office who was a female lieutenant, and she filed a complaint of harassment against him, and he was cleared by an internal affairs investigation. But those investigations only say, Lieutenant Blank, and they black out the information of the person's name, so to protect their identity. So he took that thing that cleared his name in that case and nailed it up on his door and wrote her name in on it in red ink for everybody to see. So he got in trouble for that. And then after a friend of Chief Reese, and this is a very complicated story, but a friend of then Chief Reese, Chief Reese had brought in from the outside the bureau to be an assistant chief, so he was not even a sworn police officer, made texts back and forth with the lieutenant, in this case the female lieutenant, about Krueger's Nazi past. Krueger sued the city for defamation of character, And as a result of that, he got a $5,000 settlement, and remember that figure, you got a $5,000 settlement, and they reversed his two sustained findings about nailing up those plaques and about nailing up the lieutenant's name to the office door.
Okay, and I know there's a lot more to that, and you're about to tell us, but I just want to stop right there and just take a deep breath.
Yeah.
At the unbelievable, I mean, this is, I'll be willing to lay the price of one of the spendier beers with anyone who wants to take this up with me, that the judge who did that has a copy of Murray and Herrnstein's infamous racist work citing with Nazi sources called The Bell Curve. This is something that's considered legitimate, and you can find it in legal offices all across the United States. It's part of the sick pseudo-science that goes along with a sort of bizarre action. I mean, from the outside, it's very clear how bizarre this is, that instead of this, well, Nazi being taken down under, well, let's say something like Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organizations Act, under some law that would effectively say, okay, this man is using color of office to promote a known, effective, and ongoing death squad. He is part of the intimidation. He has therefore, you know, violated everything that should be in place to prevent that sort of thing in a police department, in a place that it, you know, claims to protect and serve. He is therefore a terror against all of the targets of Nazis, which, as we know, is rather extensive. Quite the opposite. No, he gets money up front. So this is how deep. This is just a little indicator, just one little peek at just how deep and how sick, how trenchant these ideas are. This is why you should be afraid when you see those lights light up behind you and you're driving your car. But go ahead, Dan.
Well, I just want to clarify that the settlement for $5,000 didn't involve a judge. It was an agreement reached between Kruger and the city, and the mayor, Mayor Hales, our previous mayor, signed off on this deal that cleared Kruger's record, and then he claimed later that he didn't realize the details. I don't know if you remember the movie and the TV show MASH, where Radar used to bring Henry Blake things to sign, and he'd just sign them. He wouldn't even look at it.
Right.
But that's, you know, I find that really hard to believe in a case like this, where you have a known neo-Nazi that was in your police bureau, that you wouldn't read the details of the settlement.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, just a Nazi coming in with a paper. Nothing. Yeah.
And
nothing
so what's really important, too, though, is that the $5,000 limit meant that that settlement didn't go before city council. And I watch the city council agenda every week to see what's going to be coming up on it. And, you know, this settlement happened out of the public eye, because if it had been $5,001, we would have had to see it. So let me tell you about another story that's not as, you know, was widely thought about or talked about when we're talking about white supremacy inside the Portland police. There are these three officers that put up, shortly after Ferguson, they put up pictures of the Portland Police Bureau badge with a banner that said, "I am Darren Wilson," which is the name of the cop that killed Michael Brown in Ferguson. And they got investigated for this. Now, they weren't investigated for use of the badge, because apparently the Portland Police Bureau never bothered copywriting their badge, which I don't understand the logic of that. It just, because if they flash their badge off duty in a personal dispute, that's against the rules. Anyway, but it was the undermining of the Bureau's credibility in planning for protests, is what they said. So the three officers got disciplined for this: Rich Storm, Chris Barber, and Rob Blank. Storm and Barber are still on the Bureau. Blank was a very right-wing Christian who used to write in the newsletter for the police association, our police quote-unquote union, all the time, and until they kind of changed their format. But go ahead.
I was trying to find the word, and I was having a senior moment, but I was trying to say he's not a very anonymous person in the police community, obviously.
Rob Blank, no. So Blank actually resigned while he was under investigation for putting up the "I am Darren Wilson" thing. But the other two are just got what's called command counseling, which is, you know, their supervisor talked to them. And then there were a bunch of officers who clicked like on that Facebook page, and they were known to the Bureau. It was published in the Willamette Week, and nothing happened to those officers who clicked on the like button on that. And one of them is Betsy Hornstein, who is an officer who has enhanced crisis intervention team training, which means that she has extra hours learning how to de-escalate situations. But she was involved in kicking and brutalizing Ty Garuli, a teenager in North Portland, shortly around the same time that these posts came up, and that it was about a month after what happened in Ferguson. And nobody ever kind of made the connection that maybe she might have racist tendencies.
And so many other incidents over the years. It's there's a it's like a ticking subterranean fault that
yeah.
every now and then lets you know that it's there and that you're in danger from it. The Smokum incident, the possums,
yep.
Recently, and of course, in the context, perfectly reasonable to wonder about the burning down of a black-owned barbecue place. I was just talking, and this is slightly tangential. I wonder, of course, you remember Moose versus Squirrel.
Yes,
a funny name for the consistency, the ongoing aggression that the police department has against dissent in general, and particularly against dissent that seeks to stand in solidarity with and to work for human rights of people of color.
Well, and not just human rights and people of color, but you know, leftists in general. I mean, they have a whole Red Squad history, keeping files and spying on organizations, including Portland Cop Watch. I mean, this Moose versus Squirrel, which is actually called Squirrel versus City of Portland, but Chief Moose was the chief at the time, so it was commonly known as Moose versus Squirrel. It was because they came to one of our very first meeting of our parent organization, and had two people undercover at our meeting write down the names of everybody in the circle and what we talked about. And one of the things we talked about was strengthening the police review board. And when Squirrel sued the city for violating his rights, the judge said, what possible criminal activity could there be in advocating for a stronger police review board? And the judge ordered them to destroy those papers. So there's a whole strain of this anti-leftist stuff.
Oh, yeah. I'm the happiest I have ever seen Portland police in my life, joking and laughing and slapping each other on the back and just having a wondrous party and good time was after Doug Squirrel's apartment was rifled. And you know, the context of that was that an unknown person who apologized while he was doing it and said, I'm sorry they're making me do this, and tried to shoot to death employees of the Third Eye. When that was being investigated, and you can put that word in scare quotes, there were a whole lot of cops around there. I came on, I guess you can say I spied on them. I brought my bicycle there. Boy, were they happy. And it's in the context of all this that we were discussing. I'm trying to give you, when I say you, I mean the audience. Those of you listening right now, I'm trying to give you an idea of just how deep this goes. And when you realize how deep it goes, you're going to be scared.
So you you mentioned an article that you read recently. I don't know if you saw about a month or two. No, I think in January, the Intercept ran a story about the FBI investigating white supremacist infiltration in law enforcement.
Was that about the Operation White Christmas?
I'm not sure if that's what it was called, but they were. There's all sorts of investigations, and James Comey is named in this article. All sorts of investigations from around the country about people, in law enforcement who have connections to these right-wing groups. And then, of course, we had our sheriff in Grant County, right, who during the Malheur standoff was in touch with the occupation leaders and invited them to come speak. And that was when they were headed to speak in his county, when the standoff happened with Lavoie Finicum, and he got killed. And then there's a sheriff in Roseburg who's an oath keeper, and he, after the shooting at the horrible shooting at the community college there, it was exposed that he had written a letter saying, please don't do anything to take away people's Second Amendment rights. I have sworn an oath to the Constitution. And so definitely in Oregon we have at least two sheriffs who are part of these right-wing movements.
Well, you certainly came through with the memory, and I appreciate that. I asked you to speak for 15 minutes. Certainly, you can speak for on this as long as you wish, but did you have any concluding comments?
Well, I mentioned to you when we chatted about this a little bit yesterday that there's a book that's called White Lies, White Power, and it's by a guy named Michael Novick. It was written in 1995, but it's
about, fresh as a daisy.
What's that?
It's fresh as a daisy, yeah. Because well, nothing's changed.
Like the specifics, and you mentioned a couple of things that happened with the racism of the Portland police back in the 80s around don't choke them, smoke them,
yeah.
And them throwing possums on a black-owned business. And so it's not, the specifics of these stories are just to illustrate the larger point that we have this collaboration between, Homeland Security and the right-wingers who are protecting the alt-right rally on June 4th. We have the Portland police choosing to push the left-wing anti-fascist protesters out of a park while not touching the right-wingers. So it's all part of a long pattern of stuff. So this book by Michael Novick, White Lies, White Power, has a chapter in it called Blue by Day, White by Night, and it's about the infiltration of police by white supremacists. And so if people can find that, it's an interesting read.
Yeah, I love the synergy of print and radio. It can be very powerful for understanding. Well, Dan Handelman, thank you so much for calling in with your information.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right. Dan Handelman, Portland Cop Watch, and other just causes. All right, the number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. I'm going to have a go at what I sometimes think of as Captain Obvious and her cavalcade of critiques. The thing that's driving me wild this week is the unbelievable, unacceptable, unreal, irresponsible, irredeemable, American idea that what we're experiencing, homelessness, powerlessness, mounting fascism, and general economic malaise, is just a passing phase. It isn't. There isn't going to be an economic upturn that's going to solve this. It's a political victory of the parasite class. The billionaires have won. They have convinced us to beat ourselves up every morning and praise them for the opportunity. They've put one of their own into the Oval Office, and maybe that's a good thing because now we can worship him for his gold-plated degeneracy. Amid soaring and proven wind and solar technology, we back out of the inadequate, weak World Climate Accords, so now we are officially doing less than nothing. Though we outnumber the billionaires 1,000 to 1 in this country, we let our own grandmothers die of sepsis from their infected toothaches in ragged tents on the sidewalk. Then to add injury to insult, we allow our masters to take the fruit of our labor and our sons and daughters too, just to attack innocent persons thousands of miles away for the sake of sadistic cruelty and mindless greed for the very few. This is not time for reform. We've had our entire lifetimes to try to reform capitalism. It is time to gather our forces. I mentioned the cities that have reposted the website. That's a start. We can organize our cities, we can organize our mayors, we can organize groups from one city to another city. We can start to build our own society right alongside the false and corrupt one that is crushing us. We can help each other. We have amazing technological communication powers now. We should begin to form the frame for a new society based on human rights and on well-informed, unintimidated participation. To even start on that, we have to remember what our rights are. To have sustenance, safety, shelter, health and peace, and to be free to act on our needs and desires wherever those actions harm none. Our choice is to fight for that better world or to fret away our years with nothing but bleakness and climate disaster and poverty on the horizon. It's our choice. It should offend you that you have no effective voice against the Jim Crow incarceration state, against the wars, against the economic devastation. It should offend you that you must fear for your life each time you see the supremacist link police force on the streets. It should infuriate you that the Rump administration has answered the call for climate remediation with sneering lies. You should be incensed that half the U.S. population lives paycheck to paycheck and that nearly a million live without any housing at all. The watered-down, corrupt elections in this country should have you smoldering with fury. The imperial war is killing whole families in Afghanistan, Syria, Yemen, and the Philippines for decades should have you screaming for justice. The U.S. troops in the longest war in U.S. history should be arresting their commanders and flying back home to confront the monsters who set them to murder their fellow human beings for profits. There is a use for anger. It focuses the mind. And this is the time to build our fury to a searing, white-hot, unquenchable fire revolution. Revolution now. Just had to get it out of me. And Mike, if you're still on the line, I'd love to talk to you. My searing white-hot flames coming out of my mouth chased off Mike for a minute, I'm afraid. So instead, we'll talk to you. I'm sorry, who did you say? Steve. Rock is so good. He reminds me of names. They fall right out of my ears. Still there, Steve?
Yes. Yes, I am. You were talking about the Portland police. Two incidences that kind of got swept under the rug that probably are not racist, but fall into the pattern. And unfortunately, your guest left and probably knows more details. But
boy, does
I remember quite a few years ago, the Portland police raided a house in North Portland that the Gypsy Jokers met in. They arrested a whole bunch of people and sent them to prison on drug charges. And it was after several years. I don't remember.
Okay, I think you're talking about Operation White Christmas and the arrest that centered on Tom's auto body on 84th and Southeast Powell.
Yeah, and several years later, one of the policemen admitted that all the drugs found had been planted by the police, and that the lieutenant who was in charge of the whole operation was Moose, who later became chief of police in Portland.
Okay, now I think you may be talking about something different, but go ahead.
Okay, and another incident that was in the news when I believe his name was Mike Stanford was a writer for the Oregonian. Just before he left, and Portland hosted the International Police Chiefs convention, there was one couple, and the sister of either the woman or the man checked into the same hotel. And in the night, a drunken man came through the pass door from the next door room and was acting like the two women were prostitutes. And when they called down to the desk threw them out of the hotel, and the records of who was registered in the room where the man came from were lost.
Funny that.
They had no idea who was in that room.
Well, so this is
like I said, they're not exactly racist incidents, but they kind of fall into the pattern of what you're talking about. Persons of minority are the only.
Yeah, and I see why you're bringing it up, because it is connected. I mean, this untouchability of the police definitely makes it easy for the police to act on racial aggression, whether or not they're part of an organized racist group. I mean, for example, the incident I was talking about in Los Angeles, it's just, could not be more blatant. Federal judge acknowledging that that they were doing all these horrible things. But the Los Angeles Police Department said just this past Tuesday, no, I'm sorry, a year ago, that there was no racial profiling in any of the 1,365 allegations of racial profiling leveled against the department. It's that deniability. It's being able to just say, I mean, what they're really saying is, we got the power, we got the radios, we got the guns, we got the connections. You can't say anything against us. And so,
yeah, and completely out of our district. But I didn't write any notes or anything, but it was either when the video of Rodney King down in Los Angeles surfaced, or the verdict in the policeman's trial came out. There was a little tiny article in the Oregonian of, in either Kentucky or Tennessee, a black man was stopped on a rural road in the middle of the night, beaten bad enough to be unconscious and taken to the hospital because he had expired plates, and the two police officers there said that he resisted arrest, and when
the usual.
He regained
I'm sorry to cut you off, but I've run out of time. The music's starting to play, and so I'll wrap it up here. Thank you very much for your call. But to summarize, I have said often that when I'm criticizing the police departments, sure, there's all those good cops, but none of them will acknowledge this very extensive connection with white supremacy and the actions on behalf of white supremacy. Won't talk about it, won't out the criminals. And this applies to the white population in general, and that is why people of color are correct when they look a white person in the eye and say, "You're racist." Because to be white is a false status. It depends on racism. It is racism. It is racism. And it is through silence that we white people maintain the system of oppression. It is through silence that we are allowed to kill and kill and kill and oppress. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
And thank you, Teresa, and thank you for listening to The Boo, KBOO Portland, your community radio station. Coming up in an hour, join us for Between the Covers. Today, Ken Jones talks to blogger, journalist, and author Cory Doctorow about his new novel, Walk Away, that envisions a future where civilians can simply walk away from society and are able to use computer-printed food, clothing, and shelter. But first, we've got Flashpoints coming right up with Dennis Bernstein. Hey, thanks KBOO members for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Finance Committee is the third Thursday of each month at 5 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032.